Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome back to another episode of Cattle HQ. This is Kieran Brandt, cow-calf field specialist out of Watertown. Today, we're going to be talking about the benefits or downstream effects of early weaning calves off of first calf heifers. And joining us today will be Dr. Hector Menendez and Dr. Benjamin Turner from Texas A&M Kingsville.
Thanks for having me on this podcast. I am a researcher located in West River at the Rapid City Extension Center as part of the Animal Science Department. And I also have a 20% extension appointment. So I do a little bit of research and extension, and that's mainly at the Cottonwood Field Station located near Phillips, South Dakota.
My name is Benjamin Turner. I'm an associate professor of natural resource management at Texas A&M University, Kingsville. Work in lots of different areas besides ranch management, which is what you'll be talking about today. Glad to be back virtually with you in South Dakota for this discussion. So thanks for having me.
We're going to take a roundabout way, and I'm going to ask the two systems guys to go ahead and define in their own words for our listeners what, when we're talking about systems dynamics as it relates to cattle production, what are we talking about? What does that mean?
Well, thanks for the question, Kieran. And system dynamics is a methodology that was developed outside of agriculture, but was developed because managers in different industries and scientists that worked with them had recognized, and it's long been recognized, that in certain conditions, the reductionist scientific method that most of us are trained in breaks down under certain conditions. And so system dynamics arose as a methodology for studying complex systems, including agriculture, that respects and tries to incorporate the complexity of systems as they operate in the real world so that we can actually learn about these systems by interacting with them rather than following a reductionist approach and then, you know, being surprised later when the data don't fit our assumptions. And so that's kind of a high level definition of system dynamics as it applies to the systems we're talking about, particularly in beef cattle production. Think about the characteristics of the beef cattle production system. It's segmented across different stages of production, from cow-calf to stocker to feeding to harvest, and then distribution to consumers. And even within those stages of production, there's sort of smaller stages of production for a topic of this podcast, like heifer development or seed stock operations that focus on genetics for the industry, so on and so forth. So you think about those different stages and how livestock flow through the system and all the different goals and constraints and processes taking place there. It just seems to me that system dynamics is a worthwhile approach or a lens at which to view beef cattle production.
And I'll just add on to that answer there, Kieran, is that, you know, there are a lot of management choices within any field, but within things like heifer development, and I'll just refer back to Dr. Dunn's paper about the two best and two worst choices he's ever made on his ranch. And he presented that at the Beef Rangeland Symposium years back. And so he was trying to incorporate many different technologies, saying if I can just get the latest and greatest and implement these many different solutions, I'm going to be profitable and successful because they're going to add value to my operation and success in terms of reproduction or herd health, pasture management. And it didn't work. And so what systems allows you to do is identify potential management solutions that are high leverage, and that you can, instead of choosing many different solutions, choose one or two really good ones that will affect the whole system over the long run. And Ben, help me out here if I'm doing that justice, but it really helps the producer say what's going to impact my system in order to achieve my goals and avoid unintended consequences that are often intertwined or unforeseeable within the future. Since things like breeding to calving, there's a big delay and a lot can happen between those two management points. And systems helps unpack the complexities within that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Hector. And to use to pick up on the example that you just shared between, say, breeding and calving and all the different things that happen between some of those decisions and what systems, at least the systems thinking side, really tries to instill in the people that pick up on and try to employ this perspective. And it's a phrase that I've started to incorporate more in my own teaching and work and lectureship type presentations is this: change anywhere creates change everywhere. And so when you think about those decisions in terms of what's my breeding season going to be and the calving season going to be and, you know, all the different grazing and feeding and labor and all the other things that are pegged to those high level decisions, if you move that by one day or one week, you know, it's creating change everywhere in the entire system. So I really like that example.
Yeah, and I think that fits really well kind of within the frame of what we're talking about today. I know way back when Olivia shared this systems paper on early weaning first calf heifers with me, and like I kind of mentioned, especially in some of our day-to-day stuff, you know, we advocate for managing heifers as a part of the system early on, all the way through development, all the way from selection through the post-weaning phase leading up to that first breeding season, to help solidify those females' success early on in their lifetimes. But for the article, we ended up using the systems paper as kind of the framework for was more of a strategy under pressure regarding heifers. You know, here in the, you know, upper Midwest, a lot of the country's seen some pretty, you know, I don't think Texas is escaping it by any means this summer at all. It's pretty dry. We were looking at more from the lens of, okay, producers have these heifers with calves on their side. Can we step in early on and make an intervention, early wean those calves? You know, can we free up some nutrient requirements for those young females so that they can worry about focusing on their own growth to maintain that, keep themselves in good condition and stay in the herd? Or is that going to have some negative downstream effects? And, you know, I think you guys saw some really cool things within that paper. And if you want to touch on some of those, feel free. But one thing that I was that I kept circling back to, you know, through all those loops and everything that you guys presented in there, was this aspect of shifting the burden and how, even though we might think that we're freeing up and making this immediate management change to these heifers early on, say, you know, even this time of year or a month ago, if we're early calving, how that's still going to have some downstream implications and is going to go on to really adjust, you know, not only the marketing outlook for those calves that we're taking off of those females super early, but as well as the future performance of those females and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I think certainly on ranch, that is the immediate trade-off, isn't it? If the calves are staying, say, on ranch or locally, at least within the vicinity of someone's management, whether it's in the same geographic location or not, but if it's within their own particular system, then the trade-off seems to be pretty immediate. You know, are you going to have the forage needed for those calves? Certainly you're freeing up something locally for those heifers that have calves that are still in that development stage, but then what do you do with the calves? I think what we tried to do in terms of the analysis for the paper you're referring to is look at a situation where that trade-off doesn't have to be or is not incentivized to take account for. So managers at the cow-calf level, they don't have to think about the trade-off in forage for those calves. Once they get rid of those calves, they're moving on. and they can focus and prioritize those heifers to get rebred and continue on. But then what's the trade-off on others in the system by doing something like early weaning? And I think that's where the more interesting results of the paper, what that came out to show, and I think has some interesting implications sort of industry-wide. And so maybe we could talk about that. But I think about what the feedback processes that were at work that you mentioned, looking at those loops and what it means for shifting the burden, et cetera. And I think at the long-term sort of thing, if I don't have to think about forage for the calves, in other words, I'm just gonna offload those animals, you know, to someone else in the system, and I'm going to free up my own resources to prioritize the heifers that I'm keeping, then potentially what that does is longer term, and in another sector of the ranch that I'm not thinking about in terms of the financial implications of weaning, the question would be that one would have to think about is, does the additional reproductive performance of those animals over the life of that animal by keeping them in the herd and facilitating them being rebred and to produce a calf for the ranch, does that added marginal reproductive performance improvement pay for the potential revenue reduction in the short term, potentially by early weaning? So that would be part of the trade-off, expanding your mental model of consideration and making that decision. If I don't have to think about what happens to the calves, then I have to think about what's the added reproductive efficiency over the life of that animal. Will that give me an additional calf or two that's going to pay for the reduction in the early weaning in that, you know, first or second year?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have like a good quick crash course cowboy description of feedback loops. So we talked about it a little bit. We're talking about like these, and obviously listeners aren't going to be able to see the hand gestures I'm making right now, but we're talking about these complicated loops of different components. And for this one, we're thinking about maybe some, you know, if you're thinking about it, how you'd read a book left to right, we're thinking about a pretty left-hand loop at the front part of our system, right after like our genetic selection components, into how we manage our youngest females, into how that's going to have a downstream effect into our overall ranch profitability, right? Is that fair?
I don't think that's wrong, Kiernan, but for the sake of the listeners, because we don't want to dive into, you know, hopefully we can get them signed up for a workshop to learn systems. But for today, it's the interconnections, how the different factors that Ben is talking about, how we are able to connect them and what influences they have on one another or other variables. And so when we refer to loops, we're talking about just the interconnections within these systems. And that's more of the technical systems thinking terminology, but for the listeners, that should help of just capturing that interconnectedness.
Yeah, Hector, I think that's certainly fair. Kieran, if I can provide an example in terms of, feedback or feedback loop or whatever you wanted to call it, interconnections, what Hector just mentioned. The easiest way that I can think of to describe a feedback loop is any basic decision that you or I or anybody else makes. Because in fact, all decisions take place within the context of a feedback loop. So an example that anyone can understand, you're driving your vehicle and you're driving your vehicle down the road and you make, based on a particular goal, to go a certain particular speed and in a certain direction, you manipulate the parameters in your vehicle, the accelerator and the steering wheel, to go at the speed and the direction that you would like to go. Of course, there's other people in the way and there's traffic and the road is not always even. And so, you know, some places you're going uphill, some places you're going downhill. So all those things are interacting with your vehicle in such a way that distorts how you achieve your goal. And so when you're going too fast, you let your foot off the accelerator. If you're going too slow, you push your foot down on the accelerator. The car moves a little further to the shoulder, you turn it closer to the center. And that's the basic mechanism of a counteracting or balancing or regulating feedback loop. To use an example for the more particular to the audience that we're talking to in terms of beef cattle production, if I'm a producer and I have a particular objective that I want to meet for some part of the operation, let's say I'm there's an area of the ranch where I'm trying to improve the range condition in that area, and I'm monitoring and I'm looking to have some level of residual forage to meet that the goals for that particular site. And I go out there and I look that maybe the forage conditions are not going to be there. That's going to send information to me to maybe change my decision. Maybe that includes taking livestock off, or maybe the system has responded in such a way I need to get livestock impact in here sooner rather than later. And so that basic, it's called information feedback. All decisions that we make take place in an information feedback. So think about managing the water temperature in your shower, your car on the road, the bank in your bank account. You use that information to make new decisions in order to improve that state of your particular system.
That was good. I liked that. And we're kind of looking at this under the lens of, okay, it's dry. We've got heifers out there. If we wean these heifers now in an effort to increase their reproductive performance as, you know, as two-year-olds, as wet twos, are we going to affect our overall profitability from that animal? I'm looking at it at the lens of by weaning her first calf off of her now, is there a chance I can get another calf out of her later in life to recoup those costs? Essentially is the lens that I'm looking at it for. And the lens that we tried to present it to producers under, you know, and I think the further we got, especially once you start, and we'll include the early weaning systems paper in the resources of this episode so that anyone that's interested can look at how complicated and how many variables go into some of those larger loops. But the further I got into it, the more I quickly realized that we're running into that classic extension answer of it depends. It really depends. But I think that brings some cool components to light regarding how producers can kind of hedge their bets by maintaining some flexibility into some of these different marketing channels. You know, like having a bunch of early wean small calves isn't necessarily detrimental, because those lightweight calves are going to perform great on grass, on harvested feeds. You're going to have some outstanding performance in the stocker segment. But it can't be a knee-jerk reaction where you've got an operating bill in town and you've got to sell those calves immediately just to pay that off. You've got to be able to maintain some type of ownership and be able to capture some of that additional performance to help recoup some of the loss from weaning teeny tiny calves at 60 days old or 75, you know, whatever the case may be. And as long as we can have some of the foresight to set ourselves up for that, I think that pays a lot of dividends rather than just having to accept the circumstances when we find ourselves, you know, low on grass. Having the foresight to sit down and look at that loop is probably a lot better than listening to this after you've just gotten back from the sale barn and sold those calves, you know?
Right, Kieran. Yeah, I think it wasn't explicitly, I think, included in the discussion of the paper that we're referring to. But I think that trade-off that you just mentioned is absolutely right. What we found in the analysis was that the whole system gains from the early weaning decision. The cow-calf sector certainly did gain, but the surprise to us was just how advantageous it was in the next segment. Essentially, in our analysis for the ranch that we looked at, was that the cow-calf sector did benefit. There was some backgrounding activities and costs before those calves left the ranch. But once they left the ranch and entered then that particular operation stocker segment, the stocker segment accrued a lot more gains than we had originally anticipated in terms of performance and financially. And so I think absolutely for you to pick up on that and anticipate that, I think is absolutely right, that if I'm not in an integrated situation and I've got to be and considering that move towards an early weaning of the heifers, of my first calf heifers, then in what way am I going to be able to actually, I don't want to use the word retain because retain has a particular meaning for what we're talking about, but if there's any way that I can recoup some of the value that those animals get at the stocker segment, I think is absolutely, absolutely right. The other thing that came up in some discussions with other folks, because, you know, I have to also be careful because the paper was, you know, our analysis was for a particular ranching system and operation in a different part of the country than the Northern Plains. And so there's some other constraints and things being going on in that particular ranching situation. But in some subsequent discussions also with some people that are closer geographically to where the ranch is that we wrote about, is that, you know, when I do go and I sell a different kind of calf in the marketplace, unless we're prepared to think about, you know, who those customers are, you know, we don't want to be into a surprise because, you know, we don't discuss it in the paper, but they said, you know, I really like your paper because we as an industry that, or as consultants that support a cow-calf industry, talk a lot about early weaning, but no one talks about if I take those animals to the sale barn or start to market those younger animals, we don't think about we're actually changing who our buyers are because it's a different clientele and a different buyer base. It's going to be looking at a lighter calf versus a heavier calf. And so, so in terms of who that customer is and a way to try to recoup some of the value that they're going to get from a younger calf once they leave the ranch, I think, Kieran, all that to say, so I think you're absolutely on the right track there.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought of it from that lens, but I mean, sure. You know, even if you're, you know, if you've had a consistent buyer for those cattle, if you're marketing them at a different time point, you know, you're going to be attracting different buyers, different, you know, different circumstances. That's a good note for producers to be aware of. You know, I mean, a lot of guys think that they have their genetics dialed in for certain production scenarios, you know, straight off to a backgrounding lot and into the feedlot. But, you know, especially when we're talking about early weaned calves, there's a lot of room for compensatory gain there. Like the article mentioned, you know, there's a lot of, those cattle can do a lot of good on grass when they're only those, you know, 3-4 weight calves. Those green guys do good on grass. In terms of the heifers, I think you guys saw in the actual reproductive performance of those heifers, you saw those females increase body condition score by a significant margin though, right? By weaning those calves off early. Do you recall if that made a pretty big impact on how many stuck around and how many additional calves you were able to get out of the system?
Yes, it certainly was a significant improvement in reproductive performance and the total number of calves that were produced on the ranch as a result of that particular change. And so this is where probably the context, I think, is most important for the audience that we're talking about, because for the ranch that we worked with for the analysis, this is a situation in the Southeast with Brahmin influenced cattle that are, you know, prone to later reaching puberty later and having generally lower conception rates altogether. And so so that's kind of one curiosity for me. You know, we did this on a Brahmin influenced herd in a particular part of the country where forage quality is not so great. It's typically abundant forage, but it's pretty poor in quality in terms of being able to meet livestock needs. And so so I'm wondering what maybe you guys thought about transferring some of those lessons to the Northern Plains, where you don't have as much of that outside influence genetically from livestock that are less productively efficient, inherently so in terms of the Brahmin influence, but also in a place that's generally, you know, on average, higher forage quality than a lot of other places. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Kieran?
You know, I think it brings up some good similarities when you think about it, because something that I get asked a lot about is, and I think there's just some some natural division kind of occurring with the within the industry of whether we move towards a production system where we're reliant on some more harvested feeds and we're set up to be supplementing and providing those animals with that type of thing. And if that's what, you know, if that's what you're set up for, and if that's just the typical year in, year out, especially like on my side of South Dakota, where there's lots of farmer cow-calf operators with some increased access to feed, you know, I think there's some ways that you can probably push back on that and make it work. But when you look at it from the lens of, you know, stock cows and making the cattle work for me on the environment, I think there's some good similarities there. You can kind of start to crack down a little bit on, and I know that's starting to get off into the weeds a little bit, but you can almost start to use it as a selection metric to create the type of cow that you're wanting to work toward, I don't know. It's a, to me, it seems like a great opportunity, especially when we get into some of these drier periods. And I know nobody likes drought, but it's a good opportunity to kind of look through the dust, look through the smoke, and have some of those external stressors really kind of form the cow herd on its own, select animals that that respond well to that type of environment and pressure. And, you know, as long as you're not, you don't end up in a wreck where a huge proportion of your females don't rebreed as a result of a drastic management change, I think you can almost use it to your benefit in terms of selecting a better adapted animal to kind of thrive in a low input system. But maybe that's just me being whimsical. I saw the similar. I think there's definitely some lessons to be pulled as we move towards, you know, a future with tighter margins and lower, less predictable, high quality feed and some things like, I definitely think there's some translations that people can draw from.
Yeah, I had not thought about it from the perspective of the of livestock selection and that sort of thing. That's widening my own mental model about some of these decisions. So I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that I was kind of in terms of trying to translate maybe some lessons that we learned in the analysis there and what it means, you know, in a different environment like the Northern Plains is kind of like, you know, the drought situation that you guys are trying to help manage through right now. And it seems to me that early weaning there is a potential, I don't know, this is just a hypothesis on my part, but given, you know, given the environment of the Northern Plains, you know, how's that different from the context that we did the analysis? Well, in the ranch location that we were operating in, again, forage quantity is typically not a problem and we typically have it year round. And so with some form of supplementation, we can get cows around the whole year. You know, lots of people know how to do that. But in a place like the Northern Plains with much more serious and dramatic seasonal shifts from spring to summer, summer to fall to winter, and you know, something that people in the Northern Plains care about and talk about, and I've just recently seen some research from South Dakota State come out about this in terms of, you know, establishing good trigger dates for your ranch in terms of removal decisions, grazing decisions, and things like that based on rainfall and range conditions and things like that. And when I saw that research, I thought, you know, maybe early weaning is a way to maybe build in some more flexibility around those trigger dates, because, you know, if I've got certain rainfall by a certain day or certain forage by a certain day, maybe that's a trigger date in my conventional system, but maybe early weaning adds some flexibility where maybe the cow herd doesn't take as large as a hit on that trigger date, you know, making some adjustments earlier on through something like early weaning. Again, just a hypothesis, but I'm just trying to think about other ways that you can translate or other ways to think about that early weaning decision in these different contexts.
And yeah, I was thinking of it, you know, that was at the time that this article was being, that me and Olivia collaborated on this article, and we were a lot drier than we are now. And so definitely we were kind of looking at it under the lens of drought defense and, you know, preserving forage base and, you know, just being cognizant that, you know, when things get dry, and especially if, you know, we're running a commingled herd with with young heifers and mature cows, when things start to teeter off of a lay moderate average year towards dry, bad, not so good conditions, those young females are going to be the ones that you're going to notice it in first. And just thinking about how we can provide producers with as much strategy or as much, because, you know, obviously when we're talking trigger dates, there's going to be a huge spread from West River to East River. And that's going to vary, vary greatly from place to place. But just what, not even that there's a specific number, but what key drivers can guys be thinking about, like we talked about earlier, just to keep that flexibility, to not have to make a knee-jerk reaction, and to feel confident that they have options and some opportunity to manipulate those loops, even if they have to stretch it, you know, even if they've got to hang on to cattle for a little bit longer, make some additional, you know, branch out into the hanging on to calves through the backgrounding phase for a little longer than they might have normally, but just having them feel confident that there might be an opportunity to recoup costs and still come out okay, rather than just having to make a knee-jerk reaction because something's not going well and then deal with the consequences.
Yeah, I would answer that kind of on our discussion about what is feedback. And as I said earlier, all decisions take place in the context of a feedback loop and how we receive information and process that information to make a new decision. And to lean on what Dr. Menendez mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, doing some good systems training in your part of the world, you know, the training that I do and in all the literature that's out there in the systems universe is it really leans on mental models and that thought process as a high leverage point in the system. So in terms of facilitating or boosting a producer's confidence that they're making a good profitable decision for their particular situation, is what the systems thinking process really prioritizes is thinking through what you, to use a word I think you used earlier, Kiernan, is anticipate, is to think through all the potential trade-offs and contingencies and good situations, bad situations that we can think of, and think through and do a little thought experiment for yourself. If I were to hold on to these things a little longer today, and I make that decision, what does that mean for X, Y, and Z factors this year, next year, the year after that? And just run that simple thought experiment for not just that decision, but if that's the case, and X, Y, Z factors change down the road, how would I respond to that? And so, you know, a lot of the listeners, I'm sure, and as well as us in our discussion today, you know, a lot of us have children, and I've got, just to add a little personal note, I have a 4.5-year-old, and he is in the stage where he's always asking immediately when he observes something, he asks, why, Dad, why? And too oftentimes we squash that curiosity about what the possible things are that could happen or why things are the way that they are. And so I would encourage anyone in any situation, ranching or otherwise, is to not squash that curiosity, to think about what's possible and to think through all those contingencies and begin to use that word you used earlier, Kieran, and anticipate what the potential ramifications are of that particular decision. And if I can do that in my decision-making process, as I make those observations about what's happening in my system, and if I leave as few stones unturned as possible in terms of the contingencies I think of or the options that I try to evaluate, then I'm going to be confident when I do make that decision to early wean or not, or to make that particular selection or not. Will it be the most profitable? Well, time will tell. But in terms of, is it going to be the most practical and advantageous for me at this time? Well, if we've run through all those contingencies, and what I tell my students all the time, leave no stone unturned to think about those, then I think you're going to be in a pretty confident position when you do pull the trigger and make that decision. All that to say is that decision-making process and how we think about our alternatives what the alternatives are that we evaluate, and the time span on which we evaluate those outcomes. You know, oftentimes we get into the, you know, the human nature of our thought process where we only think about the immediate term. You know, we don't think about next year or 2 years from now or 5 years from now. And to think about what that, you know, what the potential outcomes, what those ripple effect or downstream effects are. And so changing the boundaries of our mental models to incorporate more alternatives and to think about it over a longer time span than just the life of these calves. And so that whole thought process on how we evaluate what in systems we call mental models is oftentimes very high leverage.
And Kiernan, I just want to add quickly that, you know, what Ben's talking about is spot on. Just to give an example, I was with a group of producers a few weeks ago and asked how many have a drought plan, and 1% raised their hands. And so we never like to be in these situations, but doing this systems approach and anticipating unintended or intended consequences and noting those things down help us when those key trigger dates come up, as Ben mentioned that article. Well, when it gets hard, what's the opportunity cost of A versus B? And having a basis for those decisions really helps during those critical times where you have to make the tough calls, where producers have to make the tough calls.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. You know, I mean, I'm a pretty visual learner. I think a lot of guys are. And so I know those, and for anyone that checks out the systems paper, I mean, these loops can be daunting. There's a lot of stuff that goes into them, and there's a lot of, you know, the arrows back and forth and all of these things, but it really does provide a good illustration of just, you know, the plethora of things that guys should be thinking about and what the driving, like you guys said, what's going to affect the downstream, what are the implications of that decision going to be? Because I think one of the most dangerous things we can say in this industry is this is the way we've always done it, and this is the way we're going to continue to do it, because that's what dad did, that's what grandpa did. And having a model, having something, some flexibility to, you know, gauge some of the effects of a decision, maybe that's a helpful step in trying something new that might become, you know, commonplace on the ranch. Maybe that's going to become just a new marketing technique, a new production technique, or if nothing else, at least something that hopefully can provide a little defense when Mother Nature strikes and something radical happens, right? I think with that, we'll can probably call it good for today. I want to thank Dr. Menendez and Dr. Turner for joining us. And yeah, we'll have show notes up with the papers that were mentioned during today's episode. And if anyone has any questions or concerns, and we'd be happy to field any phone calls or emails regarding today's subject. And yeah, any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.